This is exactly right.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Forgive me for interrupting. I'm Bridger Weiniger, host of I Said No Gifts on Exactly Right. Each week, I invite my favorite people in comedy over to chat, and they always bring a gift. We're coming up on our 200th episode, and every episode is a gem. I have welcomed all kinds of great guests, including Cola Scola, Bowen Yang, Robbie Hoffman. It goes on and on and on. And you don't want to miss the 200th episode with the great Maria Bamford. What does she bring me? Find out April 25th. New episodes every Thursday. Follow I Said No Gifts wherever you get your podcasts.
Understand that boredom is really important. And to help kids understand that it's important and that there are a myriad of things that they can do or not do. And it's not always about doing. And for you parents, it's not always your job to figure this out. This is another thing that's happened in our culture, in our parenting culture over time, is that somehow it's our job to figure everything out for our kids. And what that does is it renders them less able to do that for themselves. Hello, Parent Footprint listeners. This is the March Sitting Down with Dr. Dan bonus episode. And today I am here with our producer, Laura, who you know well, to answer your listener questions. Every month, you know what we do? We listen to your questions. We read your questions. We ponder your questions. Thank you for submitting them through Facebook, X, Instagram, or to our email. And please, please, please continue to keep them coming because we learn from your questions and we grow and benefit from all of this. Hello, Laura.
Hi, Dan. You actually just said what I was going to say, which is it's starting to be that my favorite role as a producer is my time in the studio with you because it's where I learn and we get to discuss and we just really feel connected to our community. So,
yes.
Excellent questions today. We're continuing the trend of finding an article or topic that seems to be something folks are talking about online, and we're going to sprinkle that into our question queue. So I'm going to dive in with the question that parents all know and get throughout their parenting journey. Dr. Dan, what do we do when our children say they are bored? This is a question for you for diverse ages. So elementary school and middle school parents asking this.
Oh, gosh. My first response is to say, how wonderful. How wonderful. So this boredom thing, boredom is a phenomenon that I think has been around through the ages. And I don't know. Maybe in the Stone Ages, in the Stone Ages as well. I'm thinking of just parents basically like, go find something to do. Well, the thing is, boredom, I think, has become more of a painful epidemic type feeling ever since we have had this instant gratification culture with iPads and tablets and phones and video games and the internet. So basically, kids have always been bored. And back in the day, there were less, imagination was required. So go outside, go play with your brother or sister, go read a book, go for a walk, just sit and look out the window. Like there was just, you'd get creative. Like some of the greatest memories are when there was nothing and then something was created into something because you had the time. Nowadays, we are just so quick to give our kids to meet that need, give them a tablet, give them something, put on a movie, put on a show, do this, do this, do this, and figure it out for them. And I think it's really a disservice. The other thing to think about is that creativity has been known to come from quiet alone time. And those are typically the times when kids say that they're bored. And then as people grow up to be creative, they actually start to seek those times because then they realize that's the time when I can go within, when I can connect some thoughts, when things come to me. So I would say to just embrace, to understand that boredom is really important, and to help kids understand that it's important and that there are a myriad of things that they can do or not do. And it's not always about doing. And for you parents, it's not always your job to figure this out. This is another thing that's happened in our culture, in our parenting culture over time, is that somehow it's our job to figure everything out for our kids. And what that does is it renders them less able to do that for themselves. So think about this as just an important part of human existence to help your kids understand that. You can help them come up with a solution. And then one last thing is that I have worked with families to create a list where they have on a board or they have on a sheet of paper or taped on the fridge or in their child's room. And it's a list of 20 things that they come up with together that when their child is bored, they can go to the list that they helped create to see about what is one or two of these things that they could try.
All right, listeners. I'm going to tell you to actually rewind everything Dan just said, because the learning moment that I just experienced, I'm going to rewind when we drop this episode, because when I encountered this question, which came through on social media, the first thing my parent instinct said was, oh no, there it is. There's that I'm bored question. But Dr. Dan, being Dr. Dan, turned it around the minute he started addressing this topic. And I just went from, oh no, the bored question, to, oh yes, why don't we frame it and flip it and turn it into something positive? Because today there really is no time for our children to be bored. And just adding to what you said from a personal point of view, as both a parent and then just a human, how blessed are we to have a moment or two of feeling bored? What can come of that? It's rare. We're inundated all the time. It's like the 24/7 tech or keeping our brains busy, keeping our hands busy. But what can come of that creatively or on your own journey if you're a grown-up in self-knowledge? Or how about rest? How about respite? How about adding even a layer of like a meditative quality? That maybe we should be striving for some moments of boredom, maybe even modeling that for our children, that it's actually okay and a gift. And I mean, my brain has just done a few cartwheels inside of my head to take a question that has still with adult children makes me cringe and want to avoid. And here we go. And instead say, wow, this is great. You actually feel bored right now? What do you want to do with that?
Right.
So thank you. I mean, I always.
But I want to acknowledge your response, though. I want to acknowledge your response because it is, I mean, your initial response. That is typical parents. Oh, no. It's like boredom has turned into this terrible thing because our kids are whining and they're complaining and they're looking to us to solve it. And then, of course, us conscientious parents who want to be good parents don't want our kids to suffer. So then there's this whole, this loop thing. So yeah, I'm glad that you mentioned that, because that is the usual parenting response.
I mean, that's where I went, but reframing it, and again, and this is really, truly the time that our children are growing up in, that they are unfamiliar with the concept of boredom, and it's not their fault. And parents are parenting. We're trying to do the best that we can do. We want to kind of keep everybody happy and harmonious. And you hear the word bored, it could be triggering, but flipping it all around and showing ourselves and our children that it can be somewhat of a gift or a time to reframe a moment and go to that list that you posted on your wall or your fridge. So that's really cool. That's really cool. And I think probably as we talk about question number two, you're going to have some similar advice, but I'm not Dr. Dan or Dr. Laura. So I'm going to give you the question and let you teach us again. So I added this little comment where I said, oh, this feels like a coincidence that our question number two today, which came via email, feels related to the first question, but it is from a different listener. Dr. Dan, do you have tips for establishing a routine during a week off from school and or later that I can use when summer comes? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't describe ages or, you know, marital status, but sounds like a family with a busy house and they're looking at weeks off. You know, we're now getting back to, I think, more typical routines. I'm witnessing that school vacations seem back in many areas in the country. Summer is unfolding in a more typical way, you know, where there are camps and some activities, but it feels like there's a little bit of going the other way now. What am I supposed to do with my kids?
Yes. And some people just had, you know, ski week and I think and spring break is coming up. So these weeks happen. So I think the first thing to think about is what type of routine or structure you think your family needs based on the type of family you have and the type of kids you have, like their profiles. And I think it's taking taking a step back because there are families that are really structured in terms of the weeks are really busy and you have school and then you have your after school activities and you have your sports and then you have your nighttime stuff and parents, one or both parents are working. So one thing to consider is to have very little structure during the week when if you have that sort of life, to have a little break and to have some downtime and maybe some time to breathe and more spontaneity. So that can still be, you can have like what we call structured flexibility. Like you can still have a idea where you're not that structured, but you're doing that on purpose. And it's all about this mindful parenting that we talk about, this conscious parenting, aware parenting, right? As we talked about in a few shows ago. Now, there are a lot of kids that because of their profiles, whether they are neurodivergent or not, they just do better with some degree of structure. I think that is really important. And in that case, I think of structure as, do you want get out of bed time? Is there a get out of bed time or by this time? And then is there still structure around electronics? Now, a lot of people, when it comes to electronics on breaks, they allow more electronics than they do during the year in a lot of cases. Again, every family is different. And this could be like, hey, guys, this is a break, so you're going to get more of it. But still, here is our time limit or here's the times of the days that we're going to do it. For many families, having that regular dinner is still important. Also okay to skip them sometimes too, because you need a vacation from the structure as well. And then for a lot of kids, particularly younger kids, bedtime is really important. Like you still have this bedtime routine. Now, at the same time, isn't this the fun time for sleepovers? Isn't this also a time that your child can be more tired the next day? And I think for a lot of us who had these kids where sleep really impacted them, we're like, no, they need the sleep because if they don't get the sleep, then they're like this and our day is like this and we don't want this, right? So I think it's just highly variable and you pick your anchor spots of structure that you think are important for your family. Wake up time, eating time, electronic time or limits, and then bedtime. But I also really support chilling because I just think so many families these days were just too structured, we're too scheduled, we're too stressed, and it's nice to mix it up a bit too. So I just think it's having a thoughtful approach to it.
I agree. I like the idea of a little pre-planning. That's wisdom from having twins and realizing that when the days off or the vacation or the summer is upon us, that is not the time to try to figure out what should we do when maybe you're getting cries if I'm bored or if you have neurotypical children like we do, when there is no routine, very bad. Right.
Neurodivergent. Right. Yes.
I have one of each. So, right. So when you have, just different kinds of kiddos.
Right.
So that is my only thing to add, is just a little pre-planning saves the day.
Yeah. And it's depending on how, well, even with younger kids, I would say include them. You know, we talk a lot about collaboration and including them in the conversation of what would they like this week to look like? You know, what do they, and what do you think about bedtime? You know, I know it's not school. What time would you like to stay up until? When do you want to get up? What are some things you want to do? Do you want to have things scheduled or do you not want to have things scheduled? Again, things go a lot better when kids are part of the process rather than just being told what's going to happen.
Very true. And generally, the word routine, I think, applies to all of us. I mean, I think we all need a little bit of structure. It's fine to have those free days, but whatever age you are, I think you can benefit from a bit of a flow, whether it's a more rigid schedule or kind of a looser flow, that there is this foundation of some kind of routine, you know, whether it's even just around things like bedtime and mealtime. So
yes. Yes.
Okay. Let's all make our schedules for summer.
Yes.
Thanks, Dan. Number three on our list is my chance to keep up with our new bonus episode tradition that I mentioned at the top of the show, where I read, research, check out social media, and just kind of look around for current news topics and parenting trends, because you all are teaching us when we are online about things that are happening in real time. So I read in prep for today's show a recent article on whattoexpect.com, which is an extension of the What to Expect When You're Expecting brand, pretty trusted by some authorities. And, you know, a lot of parents like that as a resource. If you don't know it, you might want to check it out, but of course, no pressure. This was in the community section for the website, where basically parents, caregivers, et cetera, are just having conversations. And what jumped out at me was the phrase nesting party. I thought, what is that? And then I went on to read, nesting parties are poised to upend baby showers. So I gave Dan a little homework and sent him a link. The article we're using, just I want to credit our research like we do on our Exactly Right network. The article is 6 Parenting Trends You'll See in 2024. Published on February 6, 2024 by writer Melissa Biofsky and fact-checked by Robin Hillmantel. And basically, I'd love Dan to just talk about this because it feels like a trend in parenting that is a response to what's happening in the parenting world of babies.
Yes, so many trends, right? Last time we talked about different types of parenting trends, and this is a different kind of new baby party trend. And I have to say, I've become a bit skeptical to all these new terms. I'm like, all right, what is it now? What's another name that we're going to call something that people have been doing for a long time, just, you know, to get a buzz? But this is actually really cool. I actually really like this one. So this whole idea of a nesting party instead of a baby shower. So you all are familiar with baby showers, and you, someone registers and you bring presents, and there is, you know, anything from a picnic to a pretty maybe fancy party somewhere, and everything's all done up. And sometimes it's related to a reveal. Sometimes it's not related to a reveal. And we know reveals have been making the news because some reveals have caught things on fire with fire. Like things have gotten like so over the top. So this is why I love this. This is bringing the whole idea of having a child and preparing for having a child in a village community focus, like down to earth. So the whole thing, this nesting party, is you help the new parent, either parent of newborn or second or third born, get the nest ready. So people are coming over and they know in advance they're helping to get the place ready. They might be helping put together a crib. They might be helping to paint a room. They might be moving space around. They might help with cleaning, particularly if there's another young child in the household and parents are trying to just deal with everything. So what I had in my mind, it's making me smile right now, is instead of everything being so over the top, so fancy and so formal and so like ritualistic, routine-ish, this is actually really helpful and applicable and like feet on the ground support.
Real.
Real. It's real. It feels real. Thank you. It feels real to help this new family bring in this person. And it isn't about all the stuff. I mean, there might be stuff involved, but it's about helping you get your nest ready for this new little birdie.
Yes. And I had the same reaction. I too, maybe even more closely because I'm combing the internet and articles and I'm on all the platforms and just, I can't keep up with the terms, but
yes,
this one just kind of tickled me a little bit. And I thought, wow, what a wonderful, fresh approach. And it's helpful. It's not about the stuff, even though it might involve stuff. And it reminded me of a time in my life when one of my sister-in-laws had been diagnosed with needing bed rest before she had her first child. And it was not in the hospital. It was a bed rest at home. But it was really right before the baby was born. And part of her challenge was she had a lot of things that she hadn't gotten around to doing because, as many people will know that have had the bed rest orders, it just comes out of nowhere sometimes and you're not ready. And it felt so meaningful for us, our family, an extended family, to be able to help. And I remember doing some loads of laundry, you know, pre-washing some of the things that you would want pre-washed to bring your baby home. Going out and getting diapers, making sure some of the essentials were there for when mom and baby and dad were coming home from the hospital. And that is, you know, 20 something years later. And maybe part of the reason I responded to this trend and article was that, because I thought, what better than helping out a new parent and a new family? And I will say for all the multiple moms out there, and again, reminding our listeners that we have twins, we had to have people helping us. I mean, it was just begging for help, begging for another set of hands. And those were the sweetest memories of, you know, when our twins were born and bonding time with family and friends. And I think because we were in a situation to not be shy, that we did need help, and yes, come over and help me do a load of laundry or watch the baby so I can take a shower. You know, some of those are obviously after the twins were born, but even before the babies came, I had people dropping off food and realizing you have twins coming, you know, what it's going to hit the fan soon and you're not going to have time to do anything, which was true. And it's still true sometimes, but I will say that, yeah, this was kind of cool. So I wonder what listeners think when you hear this when you hear this episode. We would love comments on social media, you know, on Parent Footprint Podcast on any of our social platforms.
And there was a picture. There was a picture, and I think it was like people like in sweats, you know, and I'm like, it just felt so real, so non-pretentious, so just
real.
Down to earth and real.
Right.
That's what we do here, people. We keep it real.
We do.
Yes.
Thank you, Dr. Dan. Moving on. So I think we're on our fourth topic or question. So this one came via email. Dear Dr. Dan, a close family friend who is of a different generation than me and my husband has a negative parenting/grandparenting style, but we think she is unaware of this. She often criticizes or just lacks intuition to offer praise when we tell her something significant or positive about our child. We see her often enough that we want to figure out how to keep this harmful energy away from our child. Should we talk to the family friend and tell her that repeated criticism without ever giving recognition of an accomplishment is just not our style? Or should we talk to our young child and say, ignore this person?
Yeah, this is a tough one, and this is not uncommon. So first thing is, ideally, in most situations in life, we communicate to another how we're feeling. And we do so in a way where we're very thoughtful about it, because in these situations, it is not easy. This, in many cases, the people don't have a lot of insight into the situation, particularly if it is an older school sort of situation, an older individual raised a certain way from a certain generation. I know this is, I'm being general here. And A, they might not be aware of it. B, they might not even agree. They may think it's fine how they're doing it. And of course, you're just way too soft. So they're just trying to, you know, mitigate how soft you are by toughening up these kids.
Ouch.
We see that a lot.
Right.
So I would say if a conversation, like ideally you have a conversation where you're trying to join and express without causing more tension, making that individual feel bad. Because the point is that they're hopefully an important part of your family and someone you care a lot about. And if you're, especially if you're seeing them a lot. So one conversation, a conversation could be, hey, there's something we want to talk to you about. We just love having you around. You're such an important part of our family. Of course, if this is true, we don't want to sugarcoat any of this, if this is true. And you know, you spend a lot of time with our child or children, and you're an important part of their life. Just, I'm not sure, there's something we just needed to share with you. I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but you can be negative in how you say things in front of our child. And we're just trying to use specific language around our kids. And you can give some examples. You don't want to talk down to them. You don't want to scold them. You don't want to make them feel shame or guilt. You just want to try to have this, like, doesn't have to be a long conversation of something that just shows like that they matter and that their words actually matter because they matter. And this is how you are trying to raise your child. Now, I'll give that a 25 to 50% success rate. But I just think it's important to communicate that. And also, then this goes to the second part of, depending on how old your child is, you know, use your judgment. Yeah, like there's a lot of situations when we have those relatives and relatives that either see a lot or you don't see a lot. And there's the family functions, the yearly or semi-yearly functions. And you let your kids know, you give them the heads up. Hey, you know how so-and-so sometimes says blah, 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 blah. Well, try not to listen to that. We don't listen to that. They're not really aware of how they're coming across. So what we've just had to learn is to ignore it. And you can say, and we're going to talk to them, or we tried to talk to them, but I just want you to know it's not a reflection of you. It's a reflection of them. So absolutely. You don't want to like throw, you know, we don't want to gossip. We don't want to be negative. We don't want to be judgmental. We don't want to unnecessarily throw a family member or a close friend family member under the bus. But you absolutely have to educate your kids about so that you're helping them to interpret the world and interpret words and interpret people and relationships. So I would, yeah, absolutely find a way to let them know. Yeah.
I agree with all of that. And I do think sometimes there is a generational gap. And when people are of a certain age, it might be a little difficult to teach a new lesson or a new approach, but dealing with respect and trust and talking about feelings and being honest always brings you to, I hope, a place of harmony. And if the children are old enough, one thing that we've always done is talking about that lens of some people are glass half full and some people are glass half empty, and that there's a different vision or a different lens through which people might see the world. And I guess bringing it back around to, it's not you, it's them. Because I think depending on the age of the children, I wish there had been some examples in here or something more about the age, but our kids could be at a vulnerable age where their self-esteem is building, or their prowess at something is building, or, you know, maybe they have met a series of challenges that feel like failures to him or her. And And then to kind of hear somebody maybe supporting that when, as a parent, you're trying to say, all right, you know, pick yourself back up and try again. So it feels delicate because I read it like you did. It feels interchangeable. You know, close family friend to me is like extended family. So but it feels like a tough one, a really tough one. In some ways, actual family could be a little bit of an easier situation. You know, if it's your brother or your sister, you might be able to pull them aside and be like, you know, every time you're saying something to our child X, it's, oh, but why didn't you do this? Or you only came in third, not first. Or you might be able to elbow a closer relative and not have that formality. So
I also want to mention something about boundaries here. And that is, if people are not healthy for you or your children just because they're family, doesn't mean you just have to continue to put yourself in that situation. And I might be going more extreme here than this situation, but this is just for us to talk about for everyone. There are limits. There are, we need to set boundaries when people are not being kind to us or our kids. And we're also then modeling for our kids how to handle difficult people who are not nice to us. And so a lot of times people are like, well, that's family. That's just what we do. And it's like, no, you know, no, it's no one's perfect. And yes, we got to help, you know, we need to stick with family and stick with close friends and try to be supportive. But there, you can see a person less if they refuse to make changes and they continue to have a negative impact on you or your children. You can see them less. You can set more limits. You could actually be more direct if you've tried and it's just not working. And then they're saying, well, like, why don't we see you as much anymore? And you say, well, it's for the things that, you know, we tried to talk to you about. Like, it doesn't work for us to say, it's not good for when you say this to our child. We're just, if you can't change the way you say this and because the impact it has, we have to see you less. And that's where you like are standing in your integrity and you're showing healthy boundaries for yourself and your family.
I'm really glad you brought that up. And I think boundary is a really important word because there can be, we're not going to get into this, but you know, there's a slippery slope of feeling like you have to adhere to maybe someone who's in a position of authority or, you know, someone who is controlling a situation around a child or a young person that, you know, isn't right. And that as parents, particularly of the younger kids in our family, showing them that it is good to have a boundary. And I'm just going to go back to the question because as you were talking about that word, what just jumps out of the text to me is keeping harmful energy away from our child. I mean, that doesn't feel like an accident that that word is in there. Harmful energy feels like maybe it is, you know, more than just somebody not doling out the compliments. And truly, if there is something harmful going on and there is a need for self-advocacy on the part of the child and or the parents, absolutely, because, you know, there's a lot that that modeling will do as our kids get older about knowing something's wrong or protecting themselves from, you know, this doesn't feel right. This is not how we do things in our family. And that this close family friend or family member, you know, it's not just permission for whatever they want to do or how they want to be, that there are rules and boundaries, you know, within our family and the larger community, really. So that's important. And I agree with every word. There are kind of levels of severity, I would say, to this particular case. And without having a lot of details, ages and example behaviors, you know, I think we covered it all. And I'm going to say that this probably, you know, as we're kind of hinting at more serious content, going into the last topic for our bonus episode today, is this is your content warning, listeners, that we are now going to discuss a very sensitive topic that has been in the news. So this is a heads up to listeners right now, that, you know, there's a content warning about violence, about other serious topics that is definitely not appropriate for all listeners of all ages. And I just want to give everyone a minute to kind of get with that and diving in. So the next question is asking for advice on how to talk about, we're recording this the end of February, but about what is now very recent, disturbing, sad, and tragic news, a story that some parents are finding they either want to talk about with their children or that their children are asking them about. And again, I'm talking in circles for listeners to mute or put on your headphones or pause this, but this is about the recent death of Oklahoma teen Nex Benedict. Nex's family and friends say that Nex Benedict identified as non-binary, and Nex died on February 8th, 2024. And that was one day after they told their family they were involved in a fight with others at their high school and was a victim of bullying. And there are a lot of layers to this. I don't think we're going to really get into all the details of the case. You know, there's investigations right. and autopsies and things going on. But, you know, we did take a look at some news stories. I'll link them in the bio. But, you know, just Googling Nex Benedict will bring up a lot of the basic facts of the case. And it's more in line, I think, for Dan to address that, as well as our past example of how you deal with these kinds of topics that are appearing in the news that our kids of all ages are seeing or, you know, hearing about. And there you have it.
Yeah, it's terrible. It's awful. It's beyond
very,
sad.
Very. Really upsetting. It's hard for us really to talk upsetting. About it, but we're seeing stuff that's asking us to help approach this. So that's why we're talking about it today.
Yeah, and it's important to talk about, even though it's easier to try to avoid it. And of course, the details of this is still unfold. The details are still unfolding about all of this. However, there is enough information to talk about some two very important themes. One being acceptance of all and how kids, teens, particularly teens, young adults can be so cruel to people who are seen as different. So one topic is acceptance, and the other one is bullying, which unfortunately still continues to this day. And how this person, they were bullied, and they were bullied for their individuality, for being who they wanted to be. And so when it comes to talking to kids about this, let's go take a broader view. So when talking to kids about this, we're going to take a broader view first about how to talk about tragedy. And you know, I really think for younger kids, we keep tragedy away from them as much as possible because there's so much of it. And it's on the news, it's on your feeds, on your phones. You want to do your best to keep your kids not having to think about terrible things, because it's coming at some point in their life anyways. So I don't think, you know, there's some parents who think, well, our kids need to be prepared for what the world is really like. And I say, well, they will be. I mean, I don't know if they'll be prepared, but they will get this information. You don't need to... try not to rush it. Try to hold off on it as much as possible. Let's try to keep our kids in the dark about the atrocities and the tragedies of the world as long as we can. Now, the question becomes then, what do you say to your kids, or when your kids are wanting to talk about it? So I'm going to go to the other end. It's easier to me when our kids either come up to us and are talking about it. Now we know that there is a need to talk to them about it because they're aware of it. Or if your kid is at this age, whether it's middle school or high school, and you think it's appropriate to say, did you hear about, just curious if you heard about. If they say no, unless you really feel there is a strong message that you want them to know, you could let it go. If you feel it's important because of who they are, where they are in life, other things that have been happening in your family or community, and knowing your child as you do, then yes, you could bring it up. Well, you might be hearing about this, a very sad thing happened. A person who identified as non-binary died, and it was unexpected. We know this person had been bullied the day before and was in a fight the day before, physical fight. And it's just important that we talk about these things and that we stand up against bullying and that we advocate for people's own individual identity and being who they are in this world. Now, of course, you're going to say that with whatever your own family values are. And then you ask your kids, you check them, like, listen, see, are they done? If they're done, let them be done. I think our young kids have so much negative information, more than we even know, that's coming through their social media, of really terrible stuff that they just get, first of all, desensitized to this stuff because they see so much of it. We don't need to keep talking about it unless you feel you need to keep talking about it for a particular reason, a parenting reason, or you see your child might want to talk about it more. And you can ask, do you want to talk about this? Do you have any thoughts or feelings about this? And they still might, but it's okay if they don't want to talk about it. I think, I don't know, it's just, there's so much bad stuff that our kids are exposed to every day. So I'm just trying to walk this line of being a place where they can come to us and have a space just to sit with it and not be lectured about it, like a safe place, and for us to try to educate them and be that translator of the world for them. But you have to use your judgment, knowing your child and knowing your family.
Right. I'm nodding my head, which our listeners cannot see, but sadly, you know, we find ourselves discussing tragedies like this often on our podcast and in our families and in our communities. And I do agree with one of the foundational things that you've taught all of our listeners, you've taught me, you've taught Phil, is just part one is always letting your child lead and having that safe space and being age appropriate and modeling your own family values around these big topics like bullying and acceptance, not judging. And again, just bring yourself back to this place of letting your child lead. So it may be that one conversation satisfies that need. It might be that your child wants to come back to you multiple times and talk about this. And I think it's very case by case, even within your family, amongst all of your children, it might be different. And just to extend a bit of what you're saying, I think there's probably more on social media and in circles of our kids, particularly middle school and high school, that they're probably seeing things that we don't even know that they're seeing or hearing about. For every story, like this tragic story of Next Benedict, there are other unnamed children that are experiencing levels
lots
of bullying and trauma and violence. And so I think knowing that you are the safe place your child, regardless of age, can always come to for facts and information and questions and uncertainty is really the quintessential Dr. Dan advice. And that for all of us, right, it's so hard to talk about, but we have to. I think that's the only way that change happens and the hope for our next generation, which sounds like a cliche, but bullying is going to be around, but hopefully, you know, with each generation, there is more knowledge and acceptance and inclusion. I mean, you know, we are deeply saddened and affected by hearing this news and by every family, an individual that is struggling with acceptance, and bullying. And you know, I hope that we are providing a place that feels safe to contemplate this. And again, if you want to talk more about it, you can always send us an email.
Yeah. Just thinking that, you know, we say, before we were joking, like, we like it real here. And, this is the other part of it being real, the tough, real stuff of life. And I'm also reflecting upon any of us who have had kids who were mistreated or bullied for real differences or perceived differences. It's a real trigger point how bad it can get. And then it can bring on memories of what your child has dealt with and what you dealt with as a result. It's a really powerless feeling. And I think in these times, there are times where it's time to act and to advocate and to take action as a way to counteract the feelings of helplessness and hopelessness about these situations.
And reaching out, you know, there are people, whether you know them or you're having to do it through, you know, a professional organization or a legitimate group that you can reach online or through chats. You know, there are phone numbers and people on call 24/7 to help. And I think too, you talked about triggering, that I'm sure that there are some parents listening that maybe have gone through their own bullying, and this can be triggering to them too, to some of their experiences. Maybe their child isn't experiencing it, but it could be a deep, dark fear of their parent, of the parent thinking, I hope my child never goes through this, and bringing up lots of feelings. It's really complicated, but
yes,
the hardest step, you know, right, for the person who is not being treated fairly or being bullied, is hopefully you can find a trusted person to reach out to, or parent, or, you know, someone that you are not alone, and you can advocate, and that there always is a, hopefully, you know, a way through, out, around. So we're with you. We're definitely keeping it real right now.
Yeah. All right, everyone. Well, we had to end on a real and sad note. And hopefully, we always hope in these situations that Nex's life has purpose because of what will come out of this, and advocacy and protest and bullying programs and awareness. And our heart goes out to Nex, Nex's family, community, and all those who are in a similar situation. All right, we're going to close with that, everyone. Thank you for listening today. We so appreciate your questions. Thank you for listening to our regular show, Parent Footprint with Dr. Dan, every Thursday, and for listening to our bonus episodes, which we drop the last Tuesday of each month, all in your regular feed. Thank you for being a part of our community, and thank you for bringing all of your amazing people to our community. You know what I'm going to ask you to do? Two things. Do your best to be that person you want your child to become, and ask yourself that guiding question: what footprint do you want to leave? This has been a Peters and Rossi production. Parent Footprint with Dr. Dan is produced by Laura Rossi. Our engineer is Phil Rossi. Theme music is Mountain Spring High, composed and performed by Gabriel Lewis. Artwork is by Garrett Ross. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Parent Footprint Podcast, and on Twitter at Dr. Dan Peters. For more information, go to exactlyrightmedia.com.